Now, the point that I'm trying to make is that it's very important to keep in mind that Zionism is basically an ideology.
Yes.
It's very close to certain messianic Jewish ideals, but they themselves formally declare that they are an ideology. And when you and their main center of attention, so to speak, is the state of Israel. Our own Jewish organizations here in Argentina, the Daya and the Amia, for example, they say on their website that their key goal and their mission is to keep the state of Israel as the spiritual center of the Jewish community here. So in a way, you have them openly saying that they have home. More allegiance to the state of Israel than they do to Argentina.
Yeah.
And we all know, unfortunately, that all these Jewish organizations in Argentina or the American Israeli Public Affairs Committee in the States or the World Jewish Congress or the American Jewish Congress, they have a lot of clout because they have a lot of money. There's a lot of money behind them. So they are able to promote their ideas, their myths, their historical myths, much more than other people can, other countries can do. I'm sure you know, but maybe not all the people who are listening in now know that two very, very intelligent academics from the United States of America, Stephen Walt, who was the dean of the John F. Kennedy School of Government at Harvard, and John Mearsheimer, who was chief of the Chicago University Social Sciences School, they wrote a book in March 2006 called The Jewish Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy, in which they prove, it's a 500-page book, and it's very well documented, they prove that AIPAC, the American Israeli Public Affairs Committee, has so much clout, and they pressure so much, and they lobby so much, and they threaten so much, that they were able to make the U.S. government, to change the U.S. foreign policy, so that it will hold more, they will give it more importance to the Israeli national interest than to the national interest of the United States.
Well, Adrian, you know what? I think that book understates their power, because when cajoling or using influence doesn't work, they've gone as far as having brought people up from the base of their political careers, such as somebody who in the United States who wants to be a state senator, and then he's moved up to the national level. But during that whole time, they've held over his head possible homosexual ties, possible pedophilia, possible wrongdoings financially, and they've got these people in their pocket throughout their careers. And the fact is, during their career, they will not receive money for their next election unless they go along with this group. Now, many of the others are dual citizen Israelis themselves. Now, we've got a guy named Barney Frank from my home state in Massachusetts who actually was arrested. He gave up a room to this young boy, 15 years old, in Washington, D.C. I think it was Georgetown outside the city. He had this young boy living there. It was his boyfriend. Everyone knew it. And this kid was doing on the side, he was selling himself on the streets as a male prostitute, a 15-year-old boy. Now, when it came to light, this man threatened the rest to say, I will disclose everybody's peccadilloes if anything happens to me, and the whole thing was shoved under the rug. Now, that's not the first scandal. We've got the Franklin cover-up. We've got stuff happening in Florida. We have stuff happening today. My point is this. They don't stop at political influence. They will murder you. They will blackmail you. They will hold you at gunpoint if necessary, and they will do it with any means available and all means necessary.
You are quite right, Daryl, and I could give you all similar examples in Argentina and other countries in the region, and I think that what you're saying helps to explain why Barack Obama, even though he's a nice guy, he's articulate, he's got a nice wife and nice kids and a nice dog, and maybe there might even be, you might even say, well, he's all right. The problem with Obama is that he is surrounded by three types of controlling entities in his own cabinet. The Clintonites, who are the same people who originally set up the architecture for the global financial collapse. You've got the CFR and Trilateral and Bilderberg members, and above all, you have the Zionists. I mean, Rahm Emanuel, the chief of staff of the President of the United States, has dual citizenship, Israeli and United States, and he's probably the main Mossad agent in the United States, and his father used to fight for the guerrilla group Irgun Zvi Leumi of notorious Menachem Begin. So in a way, we can see that even though you might find a nice president, the problem, time and again, is that they are always surrounded by controlling entities.
Well, Well, let's go into the Clintonites, though. We got Summers, a Jewish gentleman who became the president of Harvard, and it made a mess of that university. But the fact was he was one of the architects through the Treasury Department of giving away through Glass-Steagall and other things. But we've also got Geithner, who is a Zionist, a Jew, working out of the Bank of New York, who was then made a Treasury Secretary. We had Rubin, who was also from a Goldman Sachs, brought into the government, also Zionist Jewish connected. We've got who are some of these others that are up at the top right now?
You have Hillary Clinton, who's obviously a wonderful Zionist, and she is Secretary of State. And you know, you mentioned Robert Rubin. How many people know that Robert E. Rubin is co-chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations together with Carla Hills? How many people realize that the honorary vice chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations is Maurice Greenberg, who was until a couple of years ago number one man and the main owner of American International Group that totally collapsed starting September of last year?
That's right.
You know, it goes back to something that, if you'd allow me, I'd just like to very briefly touch upon. You were saying the people who are in the know and the top managers and the, I call them the useful idiots. When you look at an organization like the Council on Foreign Relations, as an example, I take that example because I studied them very, very closely. I wrote a book about them called The World's Mastermind in Spanish, however. And you can see that in a way to understand the CFR, you have to see it as three concentric circles. In the middle, you have a nucleus, which might be about 30, at most 35 people who are really in the know. Your Kissingers, your Rockefellers, your Rubens, your Maurice Greenbergs, your Carla Hills and so forth.
Brothman, fam. How about the Brothmans? And of course, you know, you can get into the Europe, but the Europeans hold sway over that group.
Oh, yes. If anything, just as America, you know, the United States is very honest in the way it describes itself. It calls its government the administration, which is pretty good. America is administered or managed from Washington, but it is really governed from New York. The real power is in New York.
I think the real power sits in the city of London.
Right. New York in turn, that's what I was going to say. New York in turn is governed from London, where you have the British Crown, you have Freemasonry, the center of Freemasonry, you have the Church of England with its ties to the Vatican, and naturally you have the City of London with all its states.
No, but Adrian, you know, I have to happen to know since 1827, the finances of the Catholic Church have been in the hands of the Rothschilds since that date. So anybody who controls your money for 178 years, controls you. And when you start looking into many of the worst decisions made within the Catholic Church, they've been made by converts to Catholicism, but they were actually Jews. And you'll note that, you know, financing through the City of London into the World War II era, and happened through Warburg, happened through Schiff, happened through the Loeb and Kahn groups. It all goes back. Now, here's the other thing. When you start looking into the Caliphate's demise, it came through the Grand Orient Lodge of Paris, not the York Rite Lodge, which held mostly British backgrounds. But you see, all of the British aristocracy married into Jewish money after Cromwell, because all of these gentrified Brits were financially in trouble. And here came these Dutch Jews who had left, many of them not Ashkenazi, Sephardic out of Spain, moved their way into Holland and into Belgium, and then over into, during the Orange Revolution, over into Britain, and married into the aristocracy. So actually, they might have names like Pemrose, but in fact, they're Jews. And you also have, yeah.
I'll give you a very famous example of one of those families that actually moved to Holland and changed their name, which is a very usual practice. The family called the Rosa Campos, who were Sephardic Jews, and in 1495 moved to Holland and changed their name, literally translating Rosa Campo into Roosevelt. So Franklin Delano Roosevelt and the Theodore Roosevelt and the Roosevelts in the United States, who are of Dutch stock, in actual fact, you can trace them back to Sephardic Jews in Spain, the Rosa Campos.
And you'll also find the Delanos, who were involved with the group that was selling, Sassoon, which was selling opium to the Chinese through the East India Company out of Britain, who also run by Jewish money. The Delano and the Sassoon family also married into Rothschild women. The Delanos were that Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And, of course, you know, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. And so when you start looking into this stuff, it's not difficult to make the connection to the very top being a Jewish conspiracy with a Zionist belief system. And this is traumatic, this belief system, where the only way that they can possibly do these horrendous acts to the rest of us is to believe through the Talmud that we are not their equal. See, if they didn't have a sociopathic, psychopathic bent on this without empathy, they couldn't justify their actions of abject poverty or destroying the food system in the Ukraine or starting World War II and having 57 million die or the Armenian massacre through the Young Turk movement. These kinds of events would never fly with somebody with a conscience unless they were indoctrinated into something quite different in the way they think. And that's where this Talmudic belief system really shows its power, is when people are faced with these horrors and they turn away from the horrors because of their indoctrination. I'm going to leave it that for a moment. We have one more break here at 10 p.m. and then we've got a full hour, Adrian, to speak about all kinds of issues. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back after this break.
You're listening to The French Connection on CII.
CII Youth, in conjunction with Alpha Primary School, presents a unique workshop, a must for all educators. Teach a child to read in 12 days. This workshop will be presented by Professor Ahmed Motia of Canada. For more details on this workshop, call Mulana Muhammad Sirat on 084-584-7733. 084-584-7733.
The Al-Kawthar Institute presents the Lord of the Worlds Weekend Course. This is a unique course teaching the Islamic perspective on Tawheed, Shirk, Magic, Astrology, and much more. Learn about the importance of Tawheed, responding to atheists, what is Shirk, and the harms of it, the ruling on black magic and astrology. All this and more presented by Ustad Surkhil Sharif and taking place in Durban between the 9th and 10th of May and in Johannesburg on the 16th to the 17th of May 2009. For more details and bookings, call 082-740-8021 or visit www.alkawthar.org.
This is CII. You're listening to The French Connection.
Adrian, we're back. It's great to have you on this program with me, sir. It's an honor, in fact, because there are very few people in the world with my base of knowledge or your base of knowledge, and bringing these two wonderful research backgrounds together is for me a treat, a rare treat. I want to get right back into this. You know, one of the things that we have to note is that they through front organizations, they make it seem like the CFR is running things, or they make it seem like the Catholics are doing it. But behind the scenes, when you finally boil away all of the veneer, what you come up with is a small handful of very powerful Zionist criminals. And you'll find them ensconced in New York. You'll find some in Buenos Aires. But you'll find the bulk of them in old Europe. And they're still pulling the strings of the world through both the British influence. You've got them in France through Bordeaux. And, you know, it's interesting that Israel is a country where Zionism is supposed to be the headquarters, but none of these criminals that run things live there. So, but basically what they use that as their Gestapo enforcement country.
That's quite true. Well, first of all, it's my pleasure to be on your show, Darren. I'm very thankful for you giving me this opportunity. Well, you know, in actual fact, the important thing is to understand how the world really works. Because very often we tend to think, I don't know, the most powerful man in the world is the President of the United States or the British Prime Minister or the President of France or whatever. And then you have to realize that they're in power for just a little while, even if in the United States at most they could be in power for 8 years, like George Bush or Bill Clinton before him. But these people you're talking about, the David Rockefellers, the Robert Rubens, the Paul Volckers, the Edgar Bronfens, They're in power for literally decades until they pass away. They only stop being in power when they die, and they have more than plenty of time to ensure that their inheritors, their successors, are going to be people who have exactly the same objectives, interests, and spiritual feeling the way they do. So in a way, we have to be very much on the alert that they try to throw like a smokescreen thing. Anybody who tries to delve into how this power structure works, anybody who tries to really say, well, hang on a minute, the way this really works is different than what we read about in the New York Times or we hear about on CNN, they will automatically say, ah, conspiracy theory. But we have to keep in mind that conspiracy theory is an absolute absurd, because many people turn away every time they hear that, because all human planning can be considered as a conspiracy. I mean, a board of directors meeting at Exxon behind closed doors, can you call that a conspiracy to make a lot of money with the exploitation and sale of oil? No, you can call it a conspiracy, but it is basically the logic behind human planning. So people who have huge amounts of powers in corporations, in banks, through family ties, through political ties, through whatever, through their Masonic lodges and so forth, it's understandable that they should get together every now and then, either at the Bilderbergs here, the Trilateral there, and a couple of other points on the pyramid. It's logical, and it would be absurd to think that they would not get together.
Yes, but you here have to understand, Adrian, you have to understand that I've done the work. 7 out of 10 billionaires that we can identify as probably higher, it's probably closer to 9 out of 10 billionaires in the world are Jewish, I mean, but it gets worse than that. The new technologies, Google, is run out of Israel by Jewish money and Jewish control. We see all of the main corporations, Veolia now, which is buying up public works across the globe. And you can see Veolia in Australia, in France. I mean, it runs my water system. It runs the bus system in Sweden. It bought up the train system in parts of Britain. Is Rothschild owned? We can see that the latest bank to go and do business in China, the first one given a license to do exchange trades in China with the renminbi, is, of course, Lazard Frere, another Rothschild-owned bank. Now, does that mean an individual named Rothschild runs this? Well, certainly there are still Rothschilds exerting major power. But what we've got is actually an infrastructure built around that wealth. And there's also an infrastructure built around the Zionist wealth of America, as well as around the city of London, that acts in concert with each other. And so to say it's this one person doing it, everybody would like me to pick a villain and say it's this villain. It's a structure that has been built with a villainous intent, but still by a group of people claiming this Zoharite supremacist bent. And now, interesting, when you read the protocols, and of course you know that a court in Switzerland said that they were a forgery, not a fraud.
Right, in Bern in 1936.
That's right. Now, a forgery is a copy of the original. not a forgery is not the same as a fraud. And of course, when you look at historic events as they relate to that document, they have followed it to the letter. And all the way up into where we are today, and, you know, this conspiracy is certainly got front groups that run it. Of course, Freemasonry is losing sway. We've got a new front group called Common Purpose that is making its way around the English-speaking world, Ireland and America, Canada, Australia, taking away property rights and getting themselves ensconced in city and state governments around the globe. My point being is that these people have no problem morphing into new organizations, and they always make the public they're manipulating pay for these new organizations. It's astonishing. They're brilliant about the way they go about this stuff.
the engineering is very shrewd, it's very good. As you say, when we think of power, we tend to traditionally think in old 19th and early 20th century terms, and we think of power as the power of the state, which is very vertical, very rigid, very structured. And yet private power, which is what really runs the world, because we have to understand that the greatest privatization of the last 50 years is not your water or your electricity or your railways or your airline. The greatest privatization of the last 50 years is the privatization of power, and the structure, the network is so flexible, it can change its name, like bank mergers. We used to have one of the main creditor banks in Argentina was Chemical Bank and Manufacturers Hanover Trust Company, but yet they merged into Chase Manhattan, and then Chase Manhattan merged into J.P. Morgan Chase. And when you want to try to trace back, well, who originally gave me this money? It's almost impossible to do so. Now, there's something that I would like to mention, Darrell, which might serve as a further wake-up call to what you've been saying throughout your programs. We are told time and again that democracy is the reign or the rule of the majority, and that we should never discriminate against minorities. We have that's all been hammered into our heads. But the question is, what happens when it's the other way around, when a minority usurps power and discriminates the vast majority of us? Because I can give you some basic arithmetic that I would like your audience to listen very closely to. If you go into any of the websites of the Israeli government or the main Jewish organizations, they will tell you that Jewish population is just under 16 million people in the whole planet. Do you realize that 16 million people is 0.2% of the population of the world, which is 6.7 billion, which means that 99.8% of the population of planet Earth is not Jewish? Now, isn't it just too much power for that tiny, tiny, infinitesimal minority of 0.2% to control world finance, to control the media, to control the United States, to control France, to control Argentina? Isn't that a minority that has usurped too much power? And if we really want to cherish and protect democracy, shouldn't we be doing something about it?
Well, exactly right. And you see, there are very few people who can make such a succinct comparison. And one of the problems is, of course, is the use this use they have of the concept of anti-Semitism. You know, the interesting thing is most of their actors in this crime gang are not even Semitic, and the ones that are, we're not acting against Semitic peoples, but rather a criminal organization. However, they've been brilliant about their management of it, and their enforcement part of it is also quite draconian. So whenever we try to pop our head above the parapet, we are barraged, we are beaten back, and they've got their organs in the press. Now, you want to talk a little bit about the South American press and how it's controlled, and because I think there are parallels throughout the globe of how they've been able to hold sway within public opinion and then go out and enforce it with the court system, which they also control through in America, through the they run the bar association is run through Jewish hands. Most of the powerful judges in America, the reason you can't get an investigation into 9/11 is Judge Hillerstein won't let any one of them go forward.
Exactly. Well, in a way, here I would like to, as far as Argentina is concerned, and probably Chile and Uruguay, most of the countries in our region, in a way, the language barrier, because we are all basically Spanish-speaking countries, is a two-edged sword. On the one side, the fact that most of our people will speak Spanish and not everybody speaks English or a second language means that we are not so contaminated by a lot of the Fox News-type press and New York Times-type press. But the other point is that very often we don't realize how the debate on Zionism is being placed squarely on the table, for example, in the United States by people like Mearsheimer, and even Jimmy Carter has come out with strong criticism of Israel, which you cannot do down here. Now, what they use down here is what I would basically call psychological operations or psychological warfare with some of their key myths. You have the historical myth, which is well known by everybody, and then you have the anti-Semitism myth. So, for example, in Argentina, they will constantly say that any criticism of the state of Israel. In my personal case, I have a very complicated lawsuit going because I was I went so far as to criticize Israel very strongly during the 2006 invasion of Lebanon, and they branded me a virulent anti-Semite. Now, I went back and I said, well, wait a second. The Israeli leadership is basically Ashkenazim. If I look at Mr. Sharon, and if I look at Mr. Netanyahu, and now Avigdor Lieberman, there's no Semitic blood there, because the Ashkenazim came from the Khazars, and the Khazars were a Central Asian tribe who had no Semitic blood whatsoever, who committed en masse to Judaism in the year 740 to avoid coming under the aegis of the Caliphate at Baghdad and the Christians at Constantinople. Now, how can I possibly be anti-Semite if I am criticizing a leadership who has no Semitic blood in their veins? And what I am, if anything, is pro-Semite, because the Palestinians are a Semitic people, the Iraqis and the Syrians are Semitic peoples, and they are being permanently clobbered, bombed, maimed and killed by the Israelis and the American government. So what they do is they confuse all the terms. They set up all. They insist on using their historical myths and their political myths as weapons. And naturally, this is repeated time and again by all the main press down here. It's very difficult to get a proper hearing or to be able to make an alternative voice be heard.
What happened when you did you have to present in a courtroom or just in the court of public opinion?
Oh no! In a courtroom, because if anything, they are in the DAIA, which is the main political organization of the Jewish community here, DAIA. They prepared a 2006 anti-Semitism report in Argentina, and they translated it into English. They dedicate about 14 pages to me to say that I'm a virulent anti-Semite because I said this and I said that. It was all declarations against the State of Israel. And the English language version has been lodged in the Anti-Defamation League's website. So if anything, I told her, look, this can get me into a lot of problems and so forth. In fact, it actually has. So I asked the judge, you know what I asked the Argentine judge? I want them to correct and ratify or rectify what they're saying. And I want you, Your Honor, as judge of the Argentine court, to define what is anti-Semitism. Because if you go into the website of the State Department of the United States of America, where they have a part of the government which is to monitor and combat anti-Semitism, and they can't even define what the hell they're talking about when they say anti-Semitism. So what the judge finally did, the lady judge, bowed down to Zionist pressures here, and they just threw out the case. So they cannot even define what is anti-Semitism. Because if we can at least get a proper definition, but they can't do it, because if they start describing it, you would say, well, hold on a minute. The Palestinians are Semites. The Iraqis are Semites. And yet the Mr. Netanyahu, Mr. Lieberman, Mr. Barak Hussein, Yehud Olmert, and Mr. Ariel Sharon, they are not anti, they're not Semitic. If anything, they look Aryan. So we got a bit of a tremendous confusion there. And public opinion has to understand that. And an open debate has to be planted squarely in the midst of public opinion, so that people can start to realize that the wool is being pulled over their eyes.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how much penetration the truth has made. Again, I've told you in private calls that when I started out, Zionism, if you put it in your Google search engine, only got me back 1,700 examples. Now, when you do it today, it's in the multi-millions, and most of it is exposing the criminal aspects of Zionism. So that means we've had an incredible penetration worldwide into the inner workings of this crime gang. Is this also the case in Argentina, or are you less advanced in exposing their criminal workings?
We might be a little bit less advanced because, as I say, the public debate has not come so much so strongly here. However, in the case of Argentina, in the case of Chile, which I know very well, the whole southern cone down here in this part of South America, traditionally, we have been very wary of Zionist influence. So we were never, public opinion here was never so completely aligned with Zionist interests the way it was in America or even in Europe because of your recent history and so forth. So in a way, the people here are more alert. What happens is that most people are very scared to talk about the matter. They're very scared because the pressure to keep silent is very large. And if anything, we're a small group of people down here that are trying to give, not just saying, oh, you know, I reject or I don't like this or that ethnic group and do it for irrational reasons. We're trying to give all the rational arguments as to why these lies are being used to benefit the state of Israel. For example, Norman Finkelstein, as far as his book on what he calls the Holocaust industry goes, which is a book which is sold in the United States, at least it goes to show that whilst he does not question the Holocaust itself, he does question the fact that it is used by Zionists to get support and sympathy and diplomatic, military, economic support from the United States to favor the state of Israel. So in a way, it is a very perverse way of using one of the many genocides that we saw in Europe in the first half of the 20th century to benefit a third state, the state of Israel, which has a completely different agenda, has a completely different objectives and interests. And that is being understood by an increasing number of people down here. Anyway, irrespective of how many there are in Argentina or in France or in South Africa or in the United States, the important thing to keep in mind is that you only need a critical mass of public opinion to understand something, and that will do all the difference. Because time and again, history shows us that the major changes, the major wake-up calls, the major whistleblowers, and the main changes are always done by a small group of people who are consistent and convincing in what they say and what they do. And once that critical mass has been built, then the majority will follow along, and they will end up realizing that what they doubted until the day before yesterday is the natural and self-evident truth today.
Well, now I've made some rather powerful connections to the Islamic world in Europe here and their goals in the Middle East area that they're trying to play out in this particular part of their crime phase. This is a phase they're working on to bring Islam under their thumb, to demoralize and make immoral the Islamic community, both by inflicting it with Western style banking, with pornography, with usury, with all kinds of problems, consumerism, destruction of spirituality by vilifying the religion itself as being radical, so forth. And they've done this over a 30-year period here that I've described as they brought in, and I've said this several times on this show, and I'm going to state it again just so I can have your comments. They brought in a minority from every Arab country in North Africa to Europe. One went to each European nation, and Italy got theirs, and Spain got the Moroccans, and France got the Algerians, and the Turks went to Germany, and the Pakistanis went to Britain. And what happened was this minority was given very bad access to education. They were discriminated against in the job market. They were marginalized where they lived. They were not invested in as a people. And then, almost like on cue, they were radicalized. And they turned the populations of each one of these nations against their indigenous populations with a virulent hatred, saying that it's their fault and it's because they're Muslims and it's because they're from Islam. They should be hated. And they're trying to jump and juxtapose that hatred into a larger hatred for Islam in the other parts of the world. In other words, Christendom and Christianity needs to have Islam as an enemy. See what this man in a cave did to you. See how radicalized Wahhabism is, which is something they built themselves. This radicalized form of Islam was actually financed by Jewish money and Jewish control. My point being is that they will actually sicken an entire race of people in the eyes of Christianity and use us to beat each other up and then pick up the pieces later with their control. Have you got a comment about all of that?
Absolutely, because you see, when we discuss these things, as you so aptly do in your program, and we all try to chip in from every part of the world, the view is...